Welcome to episode 38 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit, and Happy 2025. Yay! Before we get to our recipe, we have a couple of Christmas updates. These are points of very important information that we must share with all of our listeners. Hi, Mom.
People need to know.
People need to know. So our listener, Mom, will remember last time we were talking about saying Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas in Hawaiian, Melikalikimaka. And what Mom learned and shared is that when you say the word Melikalikimaka, your phone will transcribe it as medically give vodka. So we think that's an excellent recipe for the holidays.
Yes, that is a recipe in and of itself. You're welcome.
Yes. And we also want to give a shout out to Christina Kading, who you remember shared her espresso martini recipe. At the time when she shared that, we had not tried that recipe. And I don't know if I'm happy to report that it is now my cocktail of choice. And I've pretty much become an espresso martini pusher. I have pushed it on every friend who's come over for the holidays. I've even taken it on the road and forced it on my in-laws in Pittsburgh and my niece. So just a word of warning, it is such a good recipe to quote Christina, you need to make one today. But it's incredibly addictive. And I am now on my second bottle of Kahlua. I bought a smaller bottle when I first tried the recipe. Went through that pretty quick. So then I went to Ye Olde Yankee Spirits, and all they had was a $40 bottle of Kahlua, which I felt was somewhat extravagant. So I went back home and said to my husband, if you would like to buy me a nice gift for Christmas, you could buy me that big girl bottle of Kahlua. Thank you, sir. And guess what happened? Under the tree at Christmas was the big girl bottle of Kahlua, the right size, the right color. How does he do it?
It's magic.
It's magic. And I also, speaking of Christmas too, want to give a shout out to my friend Betsy. Hi, Betsy, who gave me an excellent knitting book on Japanese lace patterns. But she also gave me these fabulous little, I guess they're like knitting tags or labels that you can put on your garments, and this is what they say. She got them on Etsy. I am never making anything for you ever again. Look after it. I'm not joking. Making this piece for you has been therapy for me. Take good care of me. This took, all caps, forever to knit. Did I mention it took forever? And then the last one, very slow fashion, so painfully slow. So, the knitting book, the yarn from Booty, the espresso martini, medically give vodka, all excellent things that have come out of this holiday season. What about you, Booty?
So I was going to say shout out to Christina for my new favorite drink, which is the gin drink. It's basil, lime, cucumber, and gin. And I add a little simple syrup and a little seltzer. So good. It's so refreshing. It's so easy. Yes, thank you for both of those recipes. And thank you, Bossy, for the wonderful yarn from Webb's, America's Yarn Store. When we were driving, when we were at Rhinebeck and on the way back, we stopped at Webb's, America's Yarn Store. And when Bossy put into the GPS the destination, this is what it came out.
Starting route to Webb's, America's Yarn Store.
And they were so lovely when we went in. They welcomed us, they took a picture with us, and they posted the picture. And we were so excited because we talk about them all the time and we love them.
We
They
really do.
really are great. So Bossy gifted me some beautiful Noro yarn. I'll put a picture of it in the show notes. Excited to work with that. So it was an excellent year, an excellent haul.
There's something that's so perfect about yarn and books as gifts
Yes.
because you have this whole half-life after of looking at them. I especially like reference books. I always feel like with regular books that are pattern books, there might be a few patterns that I like, but the reference book open up entire worlds of possibility that are very exciting to me.
They're wonderful. Yeah. And it extends the holidays, that warm and fuzzy glow that you get because you're working with the yarn that your sister gave.
And you're thinking about that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and speaking of Christmas, one of the highlights of our Christmas was, it was actually after Christmas, was when Bossy's son came out for a visit and the cousins got together and made a wonderful gingerbread house. Now, I got this kit at Costco, so they didn't have to actually bake anything. The house was pre-assembled, so they were just decorating it. But since they are now 19, 20, and 22, their skills in the decorating department have progressed quite a bit. I will put a picture of this very unique gingerbread house. It's a horror mansion. They tend to do, typically they have a horror theme.
Yes, it's
Yeah.
sort of gingerbread house taken over by Godzilla monster, and
Yes.
that's what they think is funny. And they all get together and they egg each other on.
Yes. 1 year we had Carrie from the Stephen King. Last year it was Aliens, the movie. That was very special. But anyway, it's one of the highlights. But well, the real highlight was having him here.
He loved every minute. Well, we mentioned before that we wanted to start the year by paying homage to two icons of eating and drinking. We talked about Ina Garten. And for this episode, we wanted to turn our attention to Martha Stewart. We gave ourselves another little assignment, which was to watch the Martha Stewart Netflix biopic, Martha. So we wanted to start with a recipe. And this is something that we both really like. It's called lemony white bean hummus, sort of in keeping with our idea of maybe being a little healthy, just to mix things up a little bit. I made this the other night for our friends, Dan and Betsy. Betsy, who gave me the gift tags. It was great. And thank God I made it because we needed something to munch on. Dinner was very late due to two things. One was the imbibing of certain aforementioned espresso martinis. So that delayed things a little. That slowed things down a little. And then a much larger slab of beef that took much longer to cook than expected. So Martha to the rescue with this tasty snack that can be literally whipped up in 2 seconds with basically all stuff that you have in your larder. So we love that. So Buddha, you want to take us through the recipe for lemony white bean hummus from Martha Stewart?
Yeah, it's so simple and so good. Perfectly perfect.
Perfectly perfect.
We'll talk about that a bit. It's a can of cannellini beans. She says to reserve 2 tablespoons of the liquid. We both decided that was maybe unnecessary. We think you should do it without, and then if it's too thick, you could always add it. 1/4 cup tahini, 1/3 cup fresh lemon juice, which is the juice of 2 lemons. 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 small clove of garlic.
Or big.
I say small.
I say big.
Small was perfect. And you basically whiz all that in your food processor or your blender or whatever. Super easy. And I think it's better if you refrigerate it for an hour or so. But if you need, needs must, you can just eat it out of the
If
blender.
you've got hungry people who
Yes.
are
Yeah.
feeling like they need to put something in their stomachs because they've just drunk a whole giant espresso martini, then you can just go. And Booty served it with veggies. I actually did it with pita chips. It was great. We thought that you could add, if you wanted, a little bit of cumin. I didn't do that. I really like the lemony fresh flavor. I just added salt and fresh ground pepper. Booty thought maybe a little bit of smoked paprika. on top for color. I think that could be good.
This is one of those things where I think part of the reason we chose it was that Martha brought us the freshness. So, I mean, you do have a can of beans there and you have your tahini, but it's the fresh garlic and the fresh lemon juice that it makes it just so much better than what you typically buy in the store when you buy hummus. Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's, if you've ever had store-bought apple pie versus homemade apple pie, that's the difference.
Well, and this is a good segue to talking about the Netflix biopic because I think one of the things that both actually, I was thinking a lot about what Ina and Martha share, and I think both of them come out of that 1950s canned cuisine. I think we talked about that in episode 31 with that Life magazine issue that was devoted to the rise of canned and pre-made food that could, remember, a thousand tiny hands in a
Right.
little cup. And that was great. But I think Ina and Martha become the response to that of let's get back to making fresh things. And they were rebelling against the reign of freeze-dried onion soup mix. And Martha says at the beginning that she didn't want people just to be dumping a can of mushroom soup on chicken.
Overcooked broccoli. Yeah.
Her story, though, is different from Ina's in that she comes from a family with six kids and a lot of mouths to feed. Her mom was a great cook and she learned everything at her mom's side, which is very different from Ina, whose mother was trying to keep her out of the kitchen all the time because her job was to study. But it was also, they had a garden because it was about economy and thrift, making a lot of stuff that they could eat because they didn't have a lot of money. And the gardening thing is really central. She says at the beginning, and I love this quote, "If you want to be happy for a year, get married. If you want to be happy for a decade, get a dog. If you want to be happy for life, plant a garden."
Yes, that's wonderful.
I love that. And when she eventually moves out of the city into Connecticut, she wants the farm and she rehabs her whole house and has all these gardens with chickens and goats. And that was a real formative experience for her of building that home. And I think started the whole notion of homemaking in trying to position that in the best possible light. I don't know. Did you want to say anything, Goody?
What struck me about her mom, she talked about her mom making 16 meals a day and how significant that was. And I think we so rarely look at, and hi, mom.
Come on.
Thanks for making, let's see, four kids. And well, I'm not sure how Martha came up with 16 meals a day, but in mom's case, I think it would be fair to say 18 meals a day because it was six of us, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
She didn't get up to make breakfast, though.
That's true. Okay, so 12 meals a day. And she didn't really make
She didn't
dad
really make lunch
lunch
either.
either. Okay, six meals a day. Six, which is what I do. I tend not to do breakfast or lunch. So you're lucky if you get dinner. But doing four meals a day is a lot. So I think that was remarkable that she recognized how hard that was. And that once she started modeling, she gave most of her modeling money to her mother because she was still struggling. It sounded like she Martha and Ina both had difficult childhoods. In Martha's case, her father was an alcoholic and a bully and a bigot. So that was not good. Martha's first husband was Jewish. So her father didn't want her to marry him because he was Jewish. So that was interesting that they both came from unhappy households in a different way. And I think that Martha exudes this sort of upper crustness. And Ina does too, but Ina did actually come from a well-off family, whereas Martha did not. She came from a pretty poor family.
Yeah, but it's so interesting to me that so often I think our connection to food comes from childhood. And I do think that Martha was trying to bring the world of her mother with all of this homemade goodness, which she appreciated, to the rest of the world and celebrate that. And I think for Ina, she was looking for the antidote to her mother's nutritional but loveless food.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that both of them go to Europe for like 5 months shortly after they're married. I think a little bit longer for Jeffrey and Ina, but that's a real window into how food should be prepared, freshness. I think it was really their home environment and the encounter with European food that shaped their attitudes in a fundamental way. Martha actually keeps a diary of what they ate and how much they spent. And she even says later, when she caters, provides these beautiful displays of fruit, strawberries spilling out of a basket, that was actually inspired by paintings that she saw of Dutch masters.
Which is true for Julia Child as well. So that there's a great, I'll drop it in if I can find it. There's a great PBS. They take Julia Child, her saying freshness is essential. That makes all the difference.
Make that song, yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
and they make a song out of it. So yeah, that's kind of where it originated, is Julia, in terms of that freshness. But Martha brings it to the masses. Well, and she points out too that there's a whole generation of people who both of their parents were working, and so this generation didn't really have any model on how to make, and certainly they weren't being taught home economics in school anymore because that's out of fashion. So they didn't really have anywhere to turn to learn how to make good food and how to do household things. Because that's the other thing. You no longer have, no matter what your class is, you don't have somebody that's cooking for you, that's cleaning for you, that's doing all the household things. And so Martha comes in and is teaching. And she says many times in this documentary that she sees herself as a teacher. That's exactly what she does, is she teaches everyone. I mean, I remember reading in her magazine, she used to have this calendar.
I remember the calendar, yes.
It would say like what she was doing each day of the month, and it would say rotate the mattress and clean the blinds and do these very, which I never did. She was guiding everyone on how, it was kind of a life coach, really.
Yeah, I think the biopic does a good job of this, though, is, yeah, she's teaching everybody, and people don't know these things. And I do remember reading the monthly thing and thinking, I will never have time to clean all the. Do you clean blinds? There was a way that she often planted the seed. But I think this is the thing, though, that is tough about Martha. And it's kind of like the advertising quandary of, if you want to sell mouthwash, you first have to sell the idea that bad breath is bad, or that yellow teeth is bad. And I think this is where women could get tripped up, that there was a way that her whole tagline was perfectly perfect. And there was a way that she was teaching everybody to do these things because nobody was doing it perfectly like her. And you could do it better, and she could show you that. And that might be good. That might make you feel like you have yellow teeth and bad breath, too. You were having to then admit that you needed to up your game.
And again, it falls back to the you can do it all, but then you have to do it all. And you could basically not sleep and you could get all of these things done and no joy, fail. There would
Yeah.
not be any time for your own enjoyment of life. So,
I think, unlike Ina, she really did not find joy in her relationships, or maybe initially with her husband. I was very interested in the part that talks about, on the one hand, how she starts her own IPO, but then she ends up being sent to prison for insider trading. And I did think she was brilliant at coming up with this, well, omni-media idea that was going to be centered on her brand and person and perfectly perfect. And none of us were ever going to be perfectly perfect ever. So that allowed her to continue ad infinitum in selling perfection.
right. Unattainable. So you're hooked. You have to buy it more and more. I also thought it was brilliant that she partnered with Kmart because her persona was an upper class. This is how you live a more expensive lifestyle. But when she branded with Kmart, it brought it down to an everyday level that made it attainable to the masses.
Well, and I thought that distinction that she made of just because you don't have money doesn't mean that you can't have taste. I thought that was a really important, sellable idea that justified the partnership with Kmart. I did love the biopic quoted an article by Joan Didion, who's a wonderful writer. It actually came out in 2000 in the New Yorker, which was really interesting because it came out about 4 years before she ends up going to what she calls Camp Cupcake, although she says it really wasn't Camp Cupcake. And by the way, Booty, do you know how old she was when she goes to Camp Cupcake? This surprised me. She was 63.
Wow.
Can you imagine being sent, even if it's a low security prison, when you're 63?
She says that she had to sleep on the bottom bunk bed because if you're over 60, that was the rule. You had to sleep on the bottom bunk bed. Wow.
Yeah, I was just astonished. But anyway, this quote from Joan Didion's article in the New Yorker, I think it was the February 21 and 28, 2000 issue, describes Martha as, quote, "This is not a story about a woman who made the best of traditional skills. This is a story about a woman who did her own IPO. This is the woman's pluck story, the Dust Bowl story, the burying your child on the trail story, the I will never go hungry again story, the Mildred Pierce story, the story about the sheer nerve of even professionally unskilled women can prevail and show the men. The story that has historically encouraged women in this country, even as it has threatened men. The dreams and the fears into which Martha Stewart taps are not of feminine domesticity, but of female power, of the woman who sits down at the table with the men and, still in her apron, walks away with the chips."
So great.
Well, and honestly, I think that's why she was sent to prison. I think all those things that made her successful were all the things that were threatening and made her a target. Because I have to say, the evidence they had for her was slim at best.
Oh, yeah. And certain other people that have been convicted of felonies are not going to prison. So there's definitely a double standard there.
One of the things that they emphasized in the biopic was that in the trial, that she's not particularly nice, that she doesn't treat people well, that she's bitchy and aggressive, that she's not Betty Crocker, that she's pushing ahead with things, that she's got really high standards because she wants to be perfectly perfect. And that also makes her a target too.
Right. There was this great moment in the other, there's a biography of Martha with Sybil Shepherd that came out, I think in the 90s. I'll put a link in. And at one point, she's talking to Kmart and they're showing her the sheets that they're going to put her name on. And Martha says, "These are polyester. These are horrible. These are your usual sheets. And they're like, yeah. She says, the point is not for me to lower myself to your standard, but for you to raise yourself up to my standard. And the guy from Kmart says, we didn't have any problems with Jacqueline Smith.
Great, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And I just thought that was so great that, and I that's sort of my new mo motto is, raise yourself up. Bossy's motto, endeavor to persevere.
Endeavor to persevere. Yeah. Well, I did love Martha's vision of revenge. Remember this? She
Oh, yeah.
said she wanted all of the prosecutors to be put in a Cuisinart and turned on high. I thought that was so great.
It was just so perfect. It was perfectly perfect.
It was perfectly perfect. It that and as a professional appliance abuser, I can say that that would be the ultimate abuse of a Cuisinart. Well, obviously the low point is when she spends 5 months at Camp Cupcake. And they even put her in solitary confinement with no food or water for 24 hours because she touched a guard. It just seemed like they were going out of their way to just knock her down a peg.
Right. They warned her that she might get accosted by other inmates, but they didn't do anything to protect her.
Right. Well, and that was the one I think saving grace is that she does start to make connections with the other inmates. And one of those, and oh, our knitting pup culture moment.
Yes.
When she leaves prison, she is wearing a crocheted poncho that one of her inmate friends had made for her. And she makes a point of saying that there's a lot of wonderful crafts. What else are you going to do hanging out in prison?
For the record, we do know that crochet is not knitting, but
Yes.
our crafting in pop culture,
Yes.
you
Our
know.
needle craft. They, of course, show her wearing this, and it becomes everybody wants to make Martha's get out of prison poncho. You can get the pattern for it on Ravelry. It's called Martha Stewart's Coming Home Poncho. And she wore it all the time. And they actually showed one episode of some TV show that she appeared in shortly after she got out. And everybody, including her little dog, was wearing the Martha Stewart's Coming Home poncho. I thought that was great. And I had such admiration for her getting out of prison and the next day going back to work.
Well, and I love that she chose the poncho as her outfit. She could have worn is something that said, I'm back in my designer clothes, I'm back wearing whatever I want. And she chose something that her fellow inmate made for her. And it just that I it speaks volumes. And I think in this documentary in general, I felt like she is done doing and saying things that she's supposed to say or supposed to do, and she's just gonna say what she wants.
Yeah, well, and she definitely says, and she says that she had to climb out of a fucking hole, which seems surprising for Martha. But yeah, I mean, she definitely has an edge to her, but you have the sense that the edge is earned in all of her experiences. And then, of course, it ends with her and her friendship with Snoop Dogg, which starts with the Justin Bieber roast, which is just hilarious. I mean, I have to, at this point, I mean, she's in her mid-70s. I mean, she's 83 now. I think it
Right.
was in 2015. She gets up into this, she gets up and participates in this Justin Bieber roast, and she's roasted, but she gives it right back, and everybody is just astonished. And I think that was the beginning of her turnaround.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Triumphant resurrection.
Well, and I loved her. I think we should end with I loved that she has two mottos. One is to learn something new every day, and the other one is when you're through changing, you're through. And I thought that was a good I mean, they're obviously connected, but I thought that was a really interesting way of her, because I think it sums up her whole life is one of constantly evolving. She starts off in catering and then she's doing books. I actually remember getting her wedding book in 1988 when I was getting married and thinking, oh, this is so perfect.
You did have a perfect wedding.
But she's constantly evolving. And I think Ina is like that too, always seeing opportunities and creating opportunities. I love the idea of her going through her garden and dictating, those peonies are dead. That makes me very unhappy. I want to know
Send.
who's getting these.
I know we have visions of going around. The dust under the dining room table is making me very unhappy.
There you
So
go.
she does seem to have a personal assistant or two. That was a great.
We highly recommend this 1 hour and 54 minute of your life. You can watch it while you're knitting. And I admired too her honesty and forthrightness. She shares these letters. I don't know how she gets the letters, because if she sent them, how does she get them back? But she shared the letters that she sent to her husband before her divorce. And you can see her agony and her hurt and her anger over the dissolution of the marriage due to extramarital affairs.
Right.
And I have to say, I thought that was extraordinary that she was willing to
Right.
share those letters.
It seemed like a pretty authentic accounting of events that happened, at least as much as one can be.
Yeah, no, I mean her willingness to share that, but so we highly recommend that and the lemony white bean hummus. So Booty, what are you knitting these days?
Well, for Christmas, I knit a shawl for my daughter. Well, okay, if I'm totally honest, I was knitting the shawl for myself. And then I thought, I hate these colors. These are really horrible colors. And then I thought, maybe my daughter would wear these colors. She pretty much indicated she was not too thrilled. They were clown colors.
Oh, like what? Like bright
It
pink?
was dun, 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 dun. We had white, we had turquoise, we had orange, and two kinds of orange, kind of a sherbet orange and a deeper orange, and
Oh.
then navy. And honestly, it was the navy that threw the whole thing off.
Because it was like the mild-mannered color in amongst the clowns. It was like the IBM superpower suit going to the circus.
Oh, yes, exactly. So, and at that point, I was pretty far into it. So I decided I'm going to finish the shawl and then I'll over dye it. So, yeah, in this case, I felt like I'm never going to wear this, and my daughter's never going to wear this as is. So there's really no harm in dyeing it. It's not going to be any worse than what it is. And so basically, you use an unsweetened Kool-Aid. And the reason why you want to use Kool-Aid packets is that it has citric acid and that sets the dye.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know
So you
that.
can't just dye yarn with food color because it doesn't have that the acid to set it. So you have to do something. I think you could do vinegar. But anyway, the nice thing about Kool-Aid. Basically, you get a pot of water, you add your Kool-Aid packets, and then you soak your yarn, or in this case a shawl, and then you put it in your hot water with the Kool-Aid. You kind of let it sit there for a while, and when the water starts to turn clear, or at least cloudy, like the dye is absorbed.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'll put in the link for the tutorial that I used for it. It's really very easy, and I think it's fairly forgiving if you do it for too long, too not long enough.
Does it get darker the longer that you leave it in there?
Yeah, so once all the dye is absorbed, it's not going to get any darker. But the only thing about this is that it doesn't necessarily absorb it super evenly. And I have a kind of a small pot for a fairly large shawl. So I could have done better in terms of getting it more evenly, but I actually really liked it. It wound up with a kind of a tie-dyed effect. And of course it smelled delicious. So
Well, I was going to ask you, what flavor of Kool-Aid? Because
I
they're all basically red dyes. And I thought you were going to say, well, they have red dye number 5 in Kool-Aid still. And that is an excellent dyeing agent for yarns.
The first time I did it, it was cherry, and it wound up being still too orange. So I did it again with blue raspberry.
Ooh.
And the blue raspberry is a very bright turquoise, but because it had the cherry in there, so I would never be able to replicate this, but it's really pretty.
Well, does your daughter wear it? That is the
She
ultimate.
wears it all the time. It looks pretty
Oh.
on her. And speaking of wonderful knitted gifts, my friend Lucy gave her a necklace with a little embroidered, it has a little sheep in a field.
Oh.
It's just this little loop. It's super cute. So you'll see it in the picture on the show notes, but it looks great on her. And I was sort of like the phoenix, it rose from the ashes. So anyway, long story short, what about you?
Well, I am still working on my Eurus sweater, my cable odyssey that remember I saw the pattern at Rhinebeck. I stopped at Webb's, America's Yarn Store, and bought the Northampton line. It's Sage Heather, color 51, and it's a, well, I guess it's just wool. So I've been, and remember, I was struggling at the beginning and saying things like, why is this so hard? And needing Bootie's advice, but I've gotten the sleeve, the first sleeve was pretty easy. It was adding all those stitches that I, but once you added them, I don't think it's going to make a great edge when I sew them together. And I'm considering maybe adding an I-cord or something on to the edge once I sew front and back together. So you start with the sleeve and then you go to the shoulder to the neck, and then you split it and you do the back and the front. And so now I'm finishing up the front and then I will prepare to join them and do the other neck to shoulder. And then I will have the other sleeve, the second sleeve. And then I will also have to cast on or add on the neck and the ribbing at the bottom. So I still have a lot of work on it, but I have to say I've really enjoyed doing the cable because I feel like it's my sweet spot of I can see where I am in the pattern. Once you set it up, you're really just continuing with the pattern. I have made some mistakes, but fairly easy to take out. Unlike lace.
Right.
So, yes, I'm enjoying it. And I think, well, as you know, it takes me 8 years to do everything. So it's going to be a while. And I have a feeling too that it's going to be like a grandma sweater where it's 3 feet wide and 2 feet.
Well, that can be a very flattering look.
I don't think a crop top on a woman of my age. Something that anybody wants to see.
Actually, Amy Gilles is the queen of the crop top, where she wears like a big flowy dress underneath it. So I think you could make it work.
Oh, that's a thought. Of course, then I'd have to find a flowy dress, but
Flowy pants.
flowy pants, yes. But anyways, I'm enjoying this. Well, Booty. I think we've covered a fair amount of territory. We have talked about an icon of late 20th century homemaking, perfectly perfect, Martha Stewart, who reveals that she's also striving for perfection in her biopic, working on things, learning every day, and just a really great story. So we highly recommend that. and the lemony hummus. And I think it's time to say, whatever you do, don't knit
Knit
like
like
my
my
sister.
sister.
But do check out our website, beautyandbossy.com. And thank you all for listening.